Chapter 10 is just a bunch of little statements. We call these epigrams sometimes, or little sayings. Verse 14, where no counsel is, the people fall. But in a multitude of Proverbs, 11, 14? What'd I say? 11, 14. Page 971. For the slow ones, that's after 970. If you lay it open this way, 70 will be on the left and 71 on the right. I think we're ready now. Even though I can't hear anything on this side. So, everything's monotone. Where no count, that thing's got a ring in it. I can hear that. Where no counsel is, the people fall. There you have a cross reference to 15:22, which is going to be similar. Proverbs 15:22. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Proverbs 19:20. Probably is another similar one. Hear counsel and receive instruction that thou mayest be wise in the latter end. There are many devices in man's heart, nevertheless the counsel of the Lord that shall stand. Okay, this is sadly lacking. This verse is sadly lacking in churches and Christians and people. Now, most people will interpret this where no counsel is, or where the multitude of counselors is, their safety. Now, how they view that, a multitude of counselors, they say, let's take marriage example. They're going to look for a marriage counselor. So they're going to go to a multitude of counselors. And basically what she's going to do is she's going to look for one that agrees with him, her, and then he's going to look for one that agrees with him. And that's not the idea of a multitude of counselors. The idea of a multitude of counselors is to find somebody who is an expert in that certain field that you're interested in. Go to them. Find somebody else who's an expert in that same field. Go to them. You see, life is too short just to learn from your own experiences. Experience is not the greatest teacher. Experience is the hardest teacher. I heard that. Okay, so the thing is you got to find out people who are experts in their field and learn from them. An example, as far as Bible doctrine goes, teaching the Bible, I don't know of anybody better than Dr. Ruckman. So that's the expert as far as the Bible doctrine goes. Okay, now as far as raising children, I don't think I'd go to Brother Ruckman for that. I'd check out Mike Pearl. Mike Pearl is very good at that. Okay, archaeology, who would I go to? Well, we had him here, Ron Wyatt. Now, was Ron Wyatt, would I go to him for Bible doctrine? No, he was a little bit messed up in his doctrine. And when we had him here, I didn't pull him in a corner, and I didn't say, Ron, you're wrong here. Could I correct you? I didn't even mention it. I wanted to get what he had. He had spent much of his life through archaeology, and so I sought him out. Multitude of counselors. Okay, and anybody that's an expert in a field, they took the whole time to figure out this field, and you can shorten your study time by just going to them. In law, it's a no-brainer for me who I'm going to find out the expert in that. And we've had him here several times, Gene Zimmerman. Okay, and now, would I talk to Gene about some doctrine of Bible? Maybe will. Maybe will on some things. But other areas, I'm not going to expect him to teach Bible doctrine. Now, he has surprised me in some of his areas. He's and I've learned a lot of Bible from Gene. But as far as law goes, he's the expert from my experience. And so the idea of a multitude of counselors here is you find somebody. If you're going to do something, if you're going to buy a car, find somebody who's an expert. Okay, whatever field you're going into music, find somebody who's an expert. And you can save a lot of time. Buying stock, if you do that, find somebody who's an expert. Now, the expert is usually not the broker. You got to figure it out. Okay, the supposed expert, do they have a money connection? As far as health goes, for several years we studied a lot of health principles. And in the health principles, the things what you have to do is you got to find out why this person teaches this health principles the way they do. Do they get a buck out of it? If they get a buck out of it, they're tainted. And you'll find in many alternative health things, the reason why they teach it is because they got healed that way in many cases. I learned in health, I've learned from George Malkmus. We've got a couple of his books. But, and then people say, well, he's very successful. He hasn't been sick, in so many years. I think Jen just had some people said, well, he hasn't been sick in 30 years or whatnot. And then she says, well, didn't he have a stroke a little while ago? Yeah. Well, I think that's being sick. See, and so I would say take some of George Malkmus material and then throw in some of Dr. Schultz. Now, would I have Dr. Schultz teach here? Bible? No way. He is as lost as a goose in a horse race. But he's good at herbs, or Dr. Christopher. Dr. Christopher's dead, though. Okay, and there's a health magazine, I don't know if I got it with me. It's a catalog, Perfect Health, it's called. You can get a website, see it. And they have the testimony of a man in there who lived 250-some years. And so they ask him his opinion on how to live long. I would think if he lived that long, he would be an expert in that field. And there's another fella, the oldest man in America is 130 years old. And they have his testimony in there. And they said his brain he's just as sharp as a tack. And I mean, it's just brilliant. This man who's lived to be 200 and some years old, outlived 23 wives. And they said he was lecturing for hours when he was over, 200 years old. And the London Times reported about this fella, age and everything. So you get on a website called Perfect Health, and you'll see some things in there. And then that guy gives what he feels is a secret to living long. You say, well, they're only supposed to live 70 or 80. Well, I'm not so sure about that. That's Psalms 90 passage, and that's somebody who lives under judgment. Okay, the Lord, obviously you definitely have to have the grace of God throughout all this. Paul Bragg was a man that lived a long time. He lived to be 94, but he died when he was surfing. So he would probably have made 120, but he was kind of a new agey type, and maybe the Lord said, I think I'll just take him out. You've got to get a little more Bible in or something like that. I don't know. What I'm saying is a multitude of counselors is finding somebody who's an expert. Bob Jones Sr. used to say, you can't borrow character. You can borrow brains, but you can't borrow character. And that's very wise. Wise is the person who realizes their ignorance, and they go to somebody who has the wisdom. But you see, people just don't want to humble themselves and learn from somebody. Learning from somebody is let them do the talking. You ask the questions, let them do the talking. And if you start arguing with them, you're just being foolish. On my trip in Israel with Ron Wyatt, Ron would ask me a certain Bible question or where the reference was, and fortunately I was able to give him the answers every time. Maybe he picked the right one. Maybe the Lord had him pick the right ones. And he took a liking to me. And about the fourth day on our tour, he was getting sick of these people reading these new translations. You go to a so-called holy site, and then they read a Bible, and they tell a ooey-gooey story. And they go to another one, and they read a Bible, and then people sit there, "Oh, I am at where Jesus was," and all that. You know, all this kind of garbage. The importance wasn't, it wasn't that he lived there, it's that he preached the word there. That was the importance. And on the fourth day, Ron Wyatt said to me, he says, "Would you teach in the King James Bible?" I said, "Sure would." He said, "Tell me when you're ready." And the next day, I said, "I'm ready." All I did was wrote something on a 3x5 card, you know, I was ready to go. And on Thanksgiving Day, 1997, happened to be my 40th birthday, I got to teach on a bus for 45 minutes the defense of the King James Bible. I think there were four people that enjoyed it. Ron Wyatt, the Jewish guide, myself, and Brent. That was about it. But after I got done, Ron was so excited, and I can hear the grumbling in the back of the bus. See, there's about 30-some people on the bus. As soon as I went back, sat down, the guide got arguing with me, and I said, "Oh, well." And so as soon as I got done, Ron was so thrilled with what was said, he said, "Let's warn him about the mark of the beast. Let's warn him about that." And you see, he believed that Christians were going to go into the tribulation. He believed that they, if they took the mark of the beast in the tribulation, they would lose their salvation. He somehow, in his mind, tried to figure out the difference between Calvinism and Arminianism and kind of intermingled them. Strangest thing, but that's kind of what he did. And when he said that to me about teaching about that mark of the beast, I just smiled and I said, "I think I gave him enough already." I didn't stop and try to correct him on his belief system because, first off, the Lord didn't lead me to do it. Secondly, he wasn't in a listening mode. He's 70 years old at the time. And the Bible says, "Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father." Now, if he wanted to start asking me Bible questions about that, of course I'd be glad to show it to him. Okay, but the idea is a multitude of counselors, get the truth from anywhere you can get it. And you'll be surprised sometimes the source that you're going to get it. Just be an adamant student of the truth and always be looking for it. Okay, so that's verse 14. Verse 15, "He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure." Now, ain't that a strange way to say something? "He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it." So what's that mean? Well, you got to slow down on these proverbs and look at them. Okay, what's surety? Interest. Let me see if I got something in the margins there. Sorta. I think I have something back in 6. Interest is also known as usury. Surety. I have a cross-reference back to chapter 6. Letter C. In verse 1, you'll see the letter C, and there gives you the definition for it. Surety. Surety. Stretch it out. Surety. Insurety. Insurance. Surety is the English word, the old English word for insurance. Okay? He that is, it's like cosigning is a form of it because a cosigner is the insurance of the one he's signing for. Okay, so he that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it. What's that mean? Smart. Well, you get hit in the arm and somebody says, man, that smarts. That smarts. That hurts. That's the common saying. Okay, he that is surety for a stranger, he's going to get bit. And he that hateth suretyship is sure. Now notice it doesn't say it's a sin to have insurance. Doesn't say that, does it? Just says you got to hate it. And I sure do hate it. Insurance is one of them things where, you know, you pay all this money out, and then when it comes time to do its service, the insurance company goes bankrupt. Or the adjuster comes out and says, oh, yeah, I know that truck's worth, you know, $10,000 to you, but to me it's worth $3,000. Insurance. And if you have an insurance policy and your house burns, like in the Peterson's case, you have to fight tooth and nail to get them to abide by their contract. I mean, insurance companies don't. Have you ever seen a poor insurance company as far as the building is always rich and elaborate, like banks and things like that? Now, the big insurance program in America is called Social Security. And if you read the Social Security Act of 1935, they say it was social insurance, socialism insurance. Okay, now I say that about Social Security, not saying a person's wrong to have a number or take the insurance. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm just telling you what the program originally was designed to do. We know now that it's a control purpose thing. Okay, but originally, it was socialism. That's what it was called, social insurance. And any of us can, if you would get the money instead of putting it in a Social Security program, if you would have personally had the money and invested, you'd have made much more than any Social Security thing would have done for you. Now, in Texas, for a while, the state employees there voted to opt out of Social Security. They had a different program. Now, I don't know if that's still true today. Okay, the idea here is that you're an insurance for a stranger and you're going to be footing the bill. Car insurance. You know, it's probably a dangerous thing now to get on that road without car insurance. Not talking about the legalities of it, just the way it is out there. Health insurance. Yay or nay. See what a person does. Now, here's the drawback about insurance is that instead of trusting our God, we tend to trust the insurance. Now, is insurance a wise thing to do? Probably so. Galatians 6, verse 2, there's several health insurance programs in America today, Christian, called Christian ones, that like Christian Brotherhood, I remember one. There's one several years called Good Samaritan, where they were basically Christians who would pool their money together to help other Christians through health crises. And that's bearing one another's burdens, Galatians 6, 2. Okay, so that's kind of the idea of verse 15. 16, a gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches. Takes work to get wealth, it takes wisdom to keep it. Strong men tell the telemarketers, take a leap. You got to say no to people. You got to say no to your appetites. When you go in stores and buying things, you got to say no to those things. You know, the plastic card and everything, just enslaving everybody and everything. Strong men retain riches. They learn to save. They scrimp. They are frugal. That's us Dutch. We're frugal. People say we're cheap. No, we're frugal. You know, just got to be careful with those words. Okay, but as far as that goes, strong men retain riches. You have to think. Okay, now, living in the day and age we're living in, Do you realize that if you bump into anybody in the street on the sidewalk, you are liable to lose everything you have? If you bump into an attorney? Do you realize some of us people who have taken law class have the ability to steal, take everything you got within 1 year? If you shake my hand, I could say you battered me and then take everything you got. Now, would I do it? No, I wouldn't do it because that wouldn't be right. But you have to be willing, you have to know, because somebody can do it to you. Any attorney can do it to you. In Colorado Springs, my sister was pulling up to a stoplight, car in front of her, and had a couple kids in the car. She stopped, did something with the kids, lapped the brake, just rolled forward a little bit, hit the bumper in the car in front. Guy gets out. Oh! Make a bunch of money that way. Now, there are things to do for your property that is very simple to do to protect yourself. I know a preacher that went to jail for a charge of a conspiracy, and he actually taught some of the aides of Jesse Helms. But I don't know if he served a couple years. But going through that process, he didn't lose one. He did not lose anything of his property. Not one thing he lost, because he knew how to protect it. And you realize that often when attorneys want to take houses on a street, they may drive down the street, they check to see if it's got a mortgage or if it's free and clear. If it's free and clear, it's fair game for them. And so the thing is you got to get yourself in a position somehow, some way, where you look worthless. Somebody asked David Rockefeller one time, they asked him, "How much do you own?" He said, "Nothing." And they kind of laughed, and he said, "But I control everything." And doesn't the Bible say that the children of this world are wiser than the children of light? Acts 16:8, and it's usually in the financial structures. And the thing to do is learn some things and how you can protect your property. And it's, again, it's very simple things that can be done so you could protect your property. If your property is free and clear, you know, obviously, often you do have a forewarning in these things, and you could always put something in the last minute and still be protected. That's the great things that we have learned. I mean, if somebody's going to come and try to get your property tomorrow at noon, we can issue a document at 8 o'clock in the courthouse that'll shut the thing down and protect your property. So that's the blessings, that you can know some things. Who's going to get your money when you die? If you're not prepared, I know who's going to get it. Government and the lawyers. Not your kids. And that's a sin for them to steal your heritage. Okay, but the thing is if you study, if you know some laws, get yourself in a position that you look like a pauper. Okay, where you don't per se own anything, but yet you can control everything. And besides, we don't own it anyway. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Okay, and so there's some things a person needs to know. Strong men retain riches. Okay, verse 17. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. Notice merciful, having mercy with people. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Okay, but he's doing good, notice, to his own soul. Bitterness that is harbored in a man's heart hurts the one who's bitter. It generally doesn't hurt the one they're bitter at. And so when we have mercy towards somebody who have done wrong, when we have mercy towards them, then the mercy comes to your own soul. That's how that's written. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul. You help yourself out. But he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. Troubleth his own flesh, you can stretch that out. I have the Ephesians 5:28 there. Troubling his own flesh, that would be a reference to his wife. A cruel man will trouble his own flesh, his wife. And that's a cruel man. Okay, 18. The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. Pretty self-explanatory, but the idea of the wicked worketh a deceitful work. There was a wicked man in the early 1900s by the name of John Maynard Keynes. People thought he was a great economist. I read a portion of his book, The Economic Consequences of the Peace, and he talks about paper currency and how paper currency will destroy a society, but yet the ones who run the paper currency have to be very cautious because their fraud will be exposed. Deceitful men. They're not hiding it as far as that goes, but here he's got in a book saying that paper currency will promote fraud, but yet he promotes paper currency. And see, that's where we're at in America. And who's doing this? Deceitful men. Now, these deceitful men, when you see them, they don't look like they get horns. They got a nice suit and tie. And you'll often see them in the parades. We had one down in Rensselaer. A guy was reelected time and time again. A guy named Jim Johns. Smooth politician. One of the smoothest. And most politicians will ride in a fancy car, you know, a convertible or something in a parade or something like that. This guy rode a beat-up bicycle back and forth. And he got elected in a conservative Jasper County time and time again, and the guy's voting record was as equal to Ted Kennedy's. But how'd he do it? Deceitful. He looked like he was one of them back and forth. Now, that's what you call a smooth politician. Okay, that's that one. 19. As righteousness tendeth to life, so he that pursueth evil pursueth it to his own death. Self-explanatory. They that are of a froward heart are abomination to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. So if you want to please the Lord, you know, people often say, boy, that was a blessing to me. That was a blessing to me. And you probably hear me pray quite often, Lord, I pray that you get a blessing today from our service. I want to be a delight to him. Okay, and that's the idea there, being a delight to God. Verse 21, though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. Okay, the idea hand in hand there, that's unity. That's a union. That's politicians getting together. Hand joining hand. Man getting together. Everybody's getting together. You know, love and harmony, unity and all that jazz. And what happens when man gets together? He kicks God out. Genesis chapter 11 is a perfect example of that. When man got together, and he's going to build him a tower. And that tower is designed that if God floods the earth again, we can be on top of the tower so we won't get flooded. God came down and listened to all these people. And he said, well, I think I'll just fix these people. And he gave this guy over here Spanish. And he gave this guy over here Japanese. And he gave this guy over here, French language. And when this worker yelled up at the other one, he yelled to give me a hammer. And because the language changed, the other one thought he said, hit him in the head with a hammer. So he took the hammer, threw it down, and hit him. You know, and that's why they got scattered out of there. Okay? And so that's what the Lord did. The Lord doesn't have to exert himself to put us in our place. All he has to do is turn off the water. All he did in Genesis 11 was he divided the languages out, split them up. That's what God thinks of world unity. In Luke 23, verse 12, the day of the crucifixion, prior to that, Pilate and Herod were enemies. Luke 23, 12, it says, that day they became friends. What did they get together for? To kill Jesus Christ. Common enemies. And you'll see the Herodians getting together with the Pharisees. The Pharisees were what you'd call right-wing extremists. The Herodians would be the left-wing extremists. And here they're getting together against Jesus Christ. When men get together, truth is kicked out. Okay, and that's the idea. Now, they're getting together here thinking that they're going to get away with punishment. The more we got, that we're right, we're going to get away with it. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. And when those hands were together at Jerusalem, about 200 million coming from China area, then you got the army coming from Russia from the north, and then you got them coming from the east and all these directions. That's when the Lord says, "Boy, I'm sure glad I got all these guys together so I can save some time." Takes one match and torches them all. And that's what he's going to do. Look in Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 8. As far as this unity going, part of God's plan, and when man gets together, the common denominator. Whenever you get people together, it's always a denominator. You have to go down. An example, if you have a church, one church that has a Christian school, okay, the one that determines the standards will be that one church. But if you have a Christian school that has 10 churches over it, shall I name one in our area? Where about 10 churches run this one Calumet Baptist school. See? They did close? Oh, praise the Lord. Okay, but they had about 10 churches on the outside. Now, how are they going to get in agreement and convictions? They're not going to all come up. They all have to go down. And so the convictions drop the more you get involved. And the same goes in life. The more men get together, the less truth can be promoted. Okay, Zephaniah 3:8. Therefore, Zephaniah 3:8. Therefore, wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey, for my determination is to gather the nations that I may assemble the kingdoms. So they call it a United Nations Assembly. Okay, why is the Lord getting them together? To pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Going to torch them. That's what he's going to do. The United Nations would not even be in existence today if it weren't for the United States foot and half the bill. And they hate our guts for it. I remember as a kid, we'd go on, once in a while we'd travel through Rose Lawn on 10 there. And there was a sign about a quarter mile off of I-65 on the east side, is on the north side of the highway, on the left-hand side, and it had a big thing. It says, "Get us, U.S., out of the U.N."
Oh, on I-94.
There's one on 94 also.
Oh, there's
two of them. Yeah, yep, yep. I remember seeing that sign as a kid time and time again, and you know, that must have got ingrained in me. I remember going out in Colorado one time, going down I-25 south of Pueblo, heading down further south, and there's some huge billboards out there. "Get us out of the United Nations." And this guy had them big, plastered all of them out there. And you see, no one, not one politician can be loyal to their oath of office of the Constitution and uphold the Charter of the United Nations. It can't be done. The two will never meet. And for us to allow that stuff to occur in our country is just insanity. Okay, that's 21. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout. Isn't that quite a statement? The Lord's got a way of writing. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout. So is a fair woman which is without discretion. Proverbs 11:22. So is a fair woman without discretion. Britney Spears. She is like a pig with a gold thing in her snout. You know, to keep your hogs from rooting, you got to take this pliers, and their snout comes up like this, okay? And you got to take that pliers, and you take a wire or a prong, and you push that right in the nose, like that. See, we've been body tattooing and this body marking. You know, we've been doing that to hogs for years. So when that hog's got that thing in his snout, he's not going to root. Because that hurts. See, and so, but in this case, instead of putting it in the snout, we're going to put a golden ring right there. And that's all these Hollywood women. No discretion. And wouldn't that be pretty interesting if you had an Academy Awards? And here comes this woman, the greatest actor of this year, and in the background, they have a great big pig with a gold thing stuck in his nose. And underneath, the greatest female actor this year, Miss Piggy. And people don't realize that these Hollywood people are all just made up. It's all a facade. They've spent thousands of dollars to get themselves to look perfect. I remember one time I was watching some special, and he was talking about this some plastic surgeon guy, and he's making this woman look beautiful. And they went through the whole thing, and after she got her face all cut up, for the first 4 months, her face was swelled up, bruised. I'm sitting there thinking, man, that's pretty good. She deserves every bit of that. What kind of an idiot? Obviously, the king of plastic surgery would be Michael Jackson. Gets too close to a candle, he might melt. He'd be like that wicked witch on the Wizard of Oz, you know. Okay, Proverbs 11:23. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. Yes, self-explanatory. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but attendeth to poverty. Okay, now there's something there. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth. Okay, how do you do this? You go out in the garden. If you're going to broadcast some seed, you're scattering it out. People say, well, you're just throwing your seed away. Well, that's what you may think, but it's going to increase. And so as far as you're giving and helping the people, you're scattering the things that God has given to you, but yet you're multiplying yourself. That's the idea there on that verse. He that scattereth. Got the cross-reference to 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6, which is probably one of the greatest conditional promises in the New Testament. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6. It says, but this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, but he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. Okay, so there's the giving out. But you have to be careful in this giving. Okay, and God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. 9 and 10 is a parenthesis, so if you go to 11, you can complete the sentence. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us thanksgiving to God. Okay, the promise there in verse 8 is you get all grace in all areas if you obey verse 6 and 7, and that's being liberal in your giving. Now, a liberal in your giving is giving of your own money. A liberal in politics is giving of somebody else's money. Okay, and some, you know, there's There's a joke goes that in Washington, D.C., it was so cold that they saw Ted Kennedy with his hands in his own pocket. You know, that's a liberal. Okay, now as far as this goes, you have to be cautious on your giving. You know, people sit there and watch television, they put up some little sickly child, and they say, you know, send $10 to UNICEF, and we'll get this to them. Don't count on it. Do it more on, your giving should be more on one-on-one, you know where it's going. Mike Roberts sent me a video a couple weeks ago, two, three weeks ago, about his work, and sometime we're going to have to view this thing. But that would be, that's some real giving, helping orphans in Vietnam, things like that. You know right where it's going. You know, I've been there, checked them out, know Mike for many years. Okay, so a lot of this stuff on TV, I wouldn't send them people a dime. One time I got a wooden nickel. I sent that to Robert Tilton. Gave my seed faith vow. Didn't get healed, but that's how it goes. You know, so be very cautious giving. You say, people say, well, you need to help out somebody who's poor. Well, if it's legitimate. If they're lazy, don't give them a dime. I mean, if they will not work. Not if they cannot work. If they will not work. Okay, and so when we give to others, verse 9 and 10 of 2 Corinthians, when we give to the poor, and to somebody who's legitimately poor, having a tough time, then in essence, you're giving a loan to God. And it's not a sin for God to give you interest back in your loan. Okay? Proverbs 11, 24. He that is, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. 25, the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. Okay, a liberal, I've already covered that, it's somebody who's generous with his own possessions. The idea of being made fat, fat is something that is the best. If you go back to Genesis 4, it says that Cain offered his sacrifice, no, not Cain, but to Abel, his sacrifice in Genesis 4:4, it says, and Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. That's the best of the herd, the idea of fat being there. Let me check that Genesis 45, see what I got on that. Maybe that's more clear. Yeah, that one's probably the better definition for you. Genesis 45, 18. So you can see how the Bible uses the word fat. Genesis 45, 18. And take your father and your households and come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat the fat of the land. See how there's the relationship there. It's the best part. So the liberal soul shall be made fat. He's going to be blessed by God. Proverbs 11:26. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. The idea of withholding is like hoarding it. 27, he that diligently seeketh good procureth favor, favor from God. But he that seeketh mischief, it shall come unto him. Probably the best example of that one will be Haman and Esther. The common saying for verse 27, it shall come unto him, is what goes around comes around. And remember Haman in Esther, where he was wanting to hang Mordecai. And you give a man enough rope, he'll hang himself. And that's what happened to Haman. Okay, that's 27, 28. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. That trusting in riches is a warning. It's a warning that the Lord gave rich people in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Don't trust your riches. And, of course, don't trust your riches because you land in a hospital for 2 weeks and it'll be gone. And living in a society we're living in and the economic basis that we're living in, it could come and go as quick as that. Okay, 29. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. The wind there. And I see I got a bunch of cross-references on that one. Did I hear the tape? Okay. We'll pick up 29. 30. 30 is going to spend a lot of time on that one anyway. Okay, stop there. Any questions, comments?